Here you are. BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy. And your plants do too.
Aw,
I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
And we are back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I am in London.
Ebenezer Scrooge himself.
I am drinking some tea right now.
Oh, you don't fucking say. Oh my God. Just
British
live every
life.
Cliche. Whatever you want to do, sweetie.
First of all, I am actually drinking tea. They brought me tea to the studio, Lewis.
Oh my God. What else are you going to do? Are you going to sing Estelle lyrics?
Probably.
Okay.
Or Little Mix lyrics.
Oh, sure.
Rita Ora lyrics.
True. Can I say something about Little Mix? It is they are becoming the new gay thing where if you don't like it, it is not like it's like Britney or something. Like you are ostracized if you aren't kind of in on them. So anyway, I'm afraid of Little Mix stans. I'm afraid.
You should be ostracized.
Okay. All right.
In case people haven't noticed, this episode is basically the Lewis and Ira Variety Hour. I'm calling into you from London.
Also, the Lewis and Ira Variety Hour, we have tried pitching this to Oxygen so many times, and it's a hard no every single time. I am sitting alone at a desk in LA like I'm Walter Cronkite. I'm just looking out at America and not out at Ira or Kara.
You know, I'm really sure that Kara's fans are going to miss her this week. Please stay out of my Instagram comments about how much you miss her. And, you know, just in case you need some book recommendations, Goosebumps, Welcome to Dead House,
oh, please.
Haunted Mask, Monster Blood. Monster Blood 2 is very good. Monster Blood 3 is not that great.
No, right. Piano Lessons Can Be Murder.
Is a very good one.
Yeah, Piano Lessons
what?
Can Be Murder. My Hairiest
very
Adventure. Please.
Yes.
One Day
at Horrorland.
Night at Tower of... Terror Tower? Is that what that's called? Anyway.
Yes, that's one set in good old London town.
That's what. See? That's the book recommendation they needed. That's the one my third grade class was most obsessed with. This guy, Dan, he brought it in, and Dan was very cute at the time. I don't know what happened to him after age of 9, but...
All right. Well, just to let everyone know, I came to London thinking that I was going to score our best interview ever. I wrote a letter to Buckingham Palace. I said that I was a big fan of Suits.
Mm-hmm.
Thought Meghan Markle would respond in kind and say, oh my God, I'm such a big fan. I'm such a big fan of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm imagining that she's speaking in a British accent now, but maybe she learned one.
That's right. It comes really quickly, just like the one you've acquired and will hopefully dispose of soon.
Yeah, she did not respond.
You don't say.
I am flabbergasted.
You should have added something about I love people who did a cameo once on CSI NY or whatever she's been on. People who've been on Deal or No Deal twice.
She was in the pilot of the 90210 reboot.
Was she really? I saw that pilot.
Yeah. She was the girl giving Ethan a blowjob in the car.
Wow. Her filmography remains the most fun to look through. It's just like one-offs and then this.
Also, I find it very suspicious that Kara is not here and also Meghan is not here. Has anyone ever seen them in the same room together?
No. I mean, I don't know where you're going with that, but I think we should just stop in our tracks and then move right ahead.
All right. Well, while I was here, I managed to talk to writer, producer, and singer M&EK.
So rad.
And so I will have an interview with him coming up later in this episode. And Lewis and I are going to talk about Shawn Mendes and a bunch of other gay shit.
Yeah, no, I think it's actually an astoundingly gay episode. So, like, if you're here for only the Kara shit, like, I apologize because I think we're going to talk about favorite poppers flavors. I'm a hard blue boy. You know that.
John Lovett tried to get into the studio, and we didn't let him in. We said, sorry, this is a gay episode.
Right. Oh, wow. You think he's like in the penalty box of gayness? Well, by the way, I mean, when he does these live shows wearing his like swim trunks or whatever, sometimes I'm like, you can't just gay it up and then be all swim trunkety.
Swim trunks?
That's his vibe. He'll wear like a tuxedo t-shirt and just some board shorts.
All right. When we're back, we're going to talk about Amanda Bynes. Lewis.
Yes.
Amanda Bynes is back.
I am very shocked. She is quite back and looking just lovely.
Yeah. After announcing her retirement from acting on Twitter in 2010 and having a series of very public arrests and troubling Twitter rants, troubling is one word for it, Amanda is now back and healthy and sober, sharing her story with Paper Magazine. The interview is the first glimpse she's sort of given us into what led to her downfall a few years ago before she had run-ins with the law and drug abuse. And now she's ready to be back on the acting scene. What do you think?
I guess I've always considered myself a fan of Amanda Bynes, but then when I saw this with like the photo spread and like the quotes that seemed reassuring and optimistic, that I am really rooting for her. It's a little bit like when that podcast Finding Richard Simmons came out. Like, growing up, you know, I had seen those videos. Like, I had done the pony to Martha and the Vandellas along with him. But then when that podcast happened, it occurred to me there is no other Richard Simmons. And there's like a hole in my soul from where he used to, you know, exist and do the pony. Amanda Bynes is sort of a similar situation where she always had a specific comedy vibe that was broad, but also like coldly sassy. And I've really, really missed that. And I don't even remember the last movie I saw her in, you know?
Plus, there were her workout videos. So.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I lost so many calories to that. Doing the Soul Train line to her moves. Yeah.
Sweating to the top 40 was hers.
Oh, yes. Sweating to the now six. Yeah, right.
So you liked the profile.
I thought it gave her a chance to kind of explain herself. Did you not like it?
I found it very weird. So here's my thing. I've always liked Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the profile itself was sort of, I mean, no shade, poorly written. I guess that's not really shade. That's just a criticism. I thought it was like more of a puff piece. It didn't really get into anything. I mean, it keeps talking about her drug use, and the majority of the drug use they talk about is her smoking weed a lot. And I'm like, sis, smoking weed wasn't making you hop on Twitter and tell Rihanna that Chris Brown beat her because she wasn't pretty enough.
Right. You know? It wasn't critical enough, especially, if marijuana's only involved, I mean, everybody I know should be, I guess, just saying the most vile things of all time.
Right. Adderall as well. I feel like a lot of the real problems that she had, a lot of the real sort of vile things that she said on Twitter were glossed over. There's that paragraph where it's like, she didn't really go into further detail. I'm like, well, did you ask her?
Yeah, right. We have the details. You have them.
you're the interviewer. Ask her about the Rihanna tweet. Ask her about the other time she just tweeted like the N-word callously.
You know?
I really didn't think that she sort of answered for anything. And it was sort of just, you know, don't do Adderall and don't smoke weed and everything will be fine. I think that there were also a lot of mental health issues at play during that downfall. I mean, we all remember it, and it seemed really dark a lot of the times. And the photos she was uploading, and not once in the interview did she talk about seeing a therapist.
Right. Yes. No, I mean, I remember at the time it feeling like, when will this end? Like, she clearly has nobody managing her. I wish in a way she had talked more about how isolated she must have been, because clearly no one was over her shoulder the way, you know, celebrities are usually and should probably be wrangled. You know, no, that is terribly grim. Especially since she did give a quote talking about how much she regretted saying certain things. And with enough context from the person writing the piece that could have actually covered some of the things you're talking about. Like maybe even the interviewer asked her about, you know, the Rihanna tweets, whatever, but just didn't write about it in the piece. But of course, I don't know based on what was written.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's like, I'm really ashamed and embarrassed with the things I said. I can't turn back time. If I could, I would. And I'm sorry to whoever I hurt and whoever I lied about, because it truly eats away at me. You know, when someone gives an apology and they're like, I'm sorry to whoever I hurt, I'm like, girl, you could have kept that.
I'm sorry, just any random person, not the specific ones I mentioned by name. And that was when we discovered that Rihanna might either is a comedy genius or hired a clapback correspondent who does brilliant work. Because that was the person who, Amanda Bynes was the one who inspired her to say, this is what happens when they cancel intervention, right?
Yes.
One of the great Twitter moments. That's why we have Twitter, ladies and gentlemen.
That was the height of Rihanna being the funniest person on Twitter.
Now I'm worried that Ariana has taken the handle. Like, she'll fly down in your Instagram comments and just with one devastating lowercase remark, like, let you know she's the funny one.
True. I mean, I'm glad Ariana is taking up that mantle, though. I think she's funny.
Yes. To me, that's arguably the thing she, I don't want to say does best. She has, like, a great voice or whatever. But she's more distinct to me as a personality than as a recording artist. I will say that.
Well, I really love her vocals, and I think Ariana's great. But I think that she really started coming into her own as a pop star once people started realizing the breadth of her personality. It's funny,
right?
Because looking back on her licking that donut and saying, like, I hate America, you were sort of like, back then it was like, oh, is this a pop star having a breakdown or being like a bitch? And like, now in retrospect, I'm like, oh, she was just being funny.
Right. Yes. Oh, she was just doing the right thing. Sometimes donuts are lickable. Sorry. I mean, I didn't invent that they just look that appetizing. You know what I'm saying?
Also, who's loving America right now?
Right. Oh, she was ahead of the curve. She was the first person to question America.
Yeah.
Queen of skepticism.
What's interesting about this profile, too, is she does touch on a lot of the body issues that she had, which is the stuff that really sort of spoke to me the most, talking about how she hated seeing herself as a boy when she did She's the Man, how when she would see Seeds back in Easy A, she thought that she looked bigger, and she was partly taking Adderall so that she could lose weight.
Also, that was kind of heartbreaking to me, because She's the Man, I think anybody who has seen that movie would consider it a pretty underrated slice of, you know, broad cinema in the late 2000s, and especially since she's so bothered by her appearance. But clearly the movie wouldn't be funny if she didn't look bizarre, you know what I mean? So I just want to sympathetically say to her, no, but you look correct for the part. You know, it's sort of like Tootsie or something. Like, that's not, of course it's slightly off kilter, you know, it needs to be in order for the movie to work.
I feel like I really would have wanted to touch more on that stuff, but once again, the piece didn't really go deep. In contrast with the Lena Dunham profile in The Cut, written by Allison Davis, who I love, she's a great writer, I thought that profile was fantastic.
And also, I mean, Lena Dunham, just in general, is, of course, infinitely quotable. For some reason, like, everything she says sticks with me in a way, like the particular way she words it, too. So her personality, again, came through. Not that I really needed
Allison,
another.
Are both of your parents black?
Right. Not that I needed another kind of think piece profile on Lena Dunham. I do feel like we've explored her personality enough. That said, this is the best one of her I've ever read.
Well, yes, I feel like this one really went further than the other pieces, specifically because Allison chose to focus less on the Jack Antonoff breakup and more on the disillusion of her friendship with Jenny Koehner.
Right, which is a sort of puzzling thing we haven't inspected before, because they obviously created, I mean, one of the most distinct TV shows of the past 10 years. It's always interesting, the public discourse about Lena Dunham, because I feel like it's conducted mainly by people who did not watch Girls, because there's this whole other side to Lena Dunham as a personality that we're sort of fixated on. But if we could inject more people into the conversation who, like, actually saw Girls, I would appreciate that, because that show has a lot going for it and a lot to criticize.
Well, yeah, I mean, you forget the fact that it was on HBO, you know, and its ratings weren't huge.
No.
So the majority of the people who talk about Lena Dunham online were not watching Girls.
Right. That was a show that subsisted on kind of prestige word of mouth, really. You know, it wasn't about being a ratings sensation, you know, the way I guess now everything else on HBO is.
Well, no, I sort of even read this piece about how Mad Men sort of became this cultural phenomenon. And, you know, like Banana Republic was selling Mad Men style clothes, and there was Mad Men everything and Mad Men references on things. But Mad Men's ratings on AMC weren't high enough that you would expect a bunch of Americans were sitting around watching this show.
Right, right, right.
So it's interesting how things sort of permeate the culture when the majority of Americans aren't watching it, but they're aware of it.
And also, it does now feel to me like the legacy of Girls is launching Adam Driver, who just, we haven't really thought about it. Not that he's not a very good actor. You haven't seen the movie Patterson. He's really great in that. But anyway, he just gets to do whatever he wants now. And I can't say the same thing about, you know, Zosia Mamet. I can't say the same thing about, you know, Jemima Kirk. You know, just Adam Driver wins. That's the takeaway from Girls.
Adam Driver, ugh. I'm disgusted with myself that in the movie Black Klansman, the main takeaway from that movie was, wow, Adam Driver was really hot pretending to be a member of the KKK.
Oh, that is too bad that you got that takeaway. I didn't have the same one, personally. But
I love the movie, actually, but I couldn't stop thinking about Adam Driver after the movie. Mostly because, you know, he was also the character who had the most to do. When you're pretending to be in the KKK in the story, you know, you're sort of getting a bigger arc than everyone else.
That's kind of true. It's sort of like what Sarah Paulson in 12 Years a Slave. Just, wow, evil really comes across on the big screen. Like, you really take it in.
Anyway, any other burning things you want to say about Amanda Bynes?
Yeah, well, I just want to say this. First of all, it is actually astounding how long we have known who Amanda Bynes is. Because I remember when she premiered on All That, which was, I believe, the third season. And I was, of course, very skeptical because she was taking the place of, one, Angelique Bates, who at the time I thought was like the breakout like kook of the show.
Where the fuck is Angelique Bates?
Come back to us. What's that? Is that, were they called Barry and Mary with Keenan?
Yes.
Guys, it was funny.
Keenan Thompson, their cooking show.
So funny. Chocolate all over their faces. Comedy.
Yes.
I mean, you need it explained.
When she left, they got rid of it. So, and then we had just more of like Keenan Thompson doing like Pierre Escargot.
Right. And also, I mean, like, of course, they relied on the Gilda Radner level strength of Lori Beth Denberg, which kept me into the show. But Amanda Bynes on that show, I thought she was too broad at first. And then, like, she became a fixture due to the segment Ask Ashley, which actually holds up as a bit. It does hold up.
I feel like Ask Ashley is how she got the Amanda show. Yes. Ask Ashley was brilliant. And it was really funny because I did think that a lot of times All That was too broad. And, you know, I mean, obviously it was for kids. You know, so it wasn't going to give you like searing cultural commentary.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny that I thought it was too broad as a child. Thinking, I'm really not feeling this.
These adults are tryhards. Yeah.
You know, I felt like it got zanier as the show went on. And I really, did like those earlier seasons with, you know, Angelique Bates, with Josh Server before he sort of became wacky. I feel like once Danny Tamborelli like joined the show, it just became like cartoon characters.
No, because Danny Tamborelli, ready for this? He was too, it was like a kid's Belushi. Just like, I'm constantly exploding. I have a violent energy, which you should watch out for. And and did he not take over like Vital Information from Lori Beth Denberg? Is that right?
He did.
Absolutely unacceptable. I mean, that's like a drop from Tina Fey to Colin Jost at the Weekend Update
Colin
desk.
Jost.
No way.
Danny Tamborelli was the Colin Jost of our youth.
Oh, my God. I'm bursting into tears right now, realizing how true this is. However, he was a good panelist on Figure It Out on Nickelodeon, which is a very underrated game show and works really well. They should reboot it.
You know, we could spend an entire hour talking about how much I love Summer Sanders.
Oh, please.
But
by the way, I can't get over how when she was on that show, because she was always dressed like a substitute teacher, she was like 22 years old as the host of that, but felt She had the gravitas of a 41-year-old.
I felt like when we were kids, though, every adult seemed like they were 40.
That's true. Especially when they're wearing that kind of denim skirt. You know what I'm saying?
Coming up next, he's written for Beyonce. He's written for Madonna. He's written for Little Mix. and now he's writing for himself. I'm going to sit down with London-based singer and writer and producer, Emenike.
Keep It is brought to you by Barefoot Dreams. Lewis?
Yes?
When you see footprints in the sand, that was when I carried you in my Barefoot Dreams robe.
Now, is that a Leona Lewis song? No?
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams, especially now as the brand is celebrating their 30th anniversary. With those 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams celebrates being the originators of everyone's favorite luxe home blanket. And while many have attempted to duplicate their blankets, robes, and more, Barefoot Dreams' fabrication and quality cannot be replicated, so don't believe the dupes. Girl, this blanket is it.
I effing love this blanket. I'm thinking about it right now, and I want to jump in my bed, which is sponsored by something that we'll do another ad for momentarily. Get ready. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times. Jesus, get a life, Oprah. My God. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as their collection of ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are made with premium materials. Their products make the perfect gifts, too. I throw this thing on. I wear it like a shawl. I look exactly like Ellen Burstyn. And I am the coziest a human being can be. Because, by the way, it's still that time in Los Angeles where it's, like, pretty mild outside, and then your apartment is cold. I can't explain it. I don't know things like basic science. For Keep It listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code KEEPIT15. Don't miss out on Barefoot Dreams' soft, soothing fabrics that will bring luxury to your life.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For over 130 years... McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night, no matter how chaotic your day is. Conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Here with my friend Uzo. However, the world knows you as Emenike.
Yes.
Yes, that is your pop star name. Your,
my alias.
Your nom de plume.
My PKA.
Where did that come from?
It's my surname.
Okay.
So my surname is Emenike. Mm-hmm. And it's spelled E-M-E-N-I-K-E. Mm-hmm. And then I just abbreviated it. And because someone at school told me, your name sounds like the four letters M-N-E-K. I was like, sounds like a stage name to me. So I just kind of with it, to be honest. And that was me. That's just been me for like...
How old were you? Were you as old as Mariah Carey was when she came up with Me, I Am Mariah, the elusive chanteuse?
Well, sorry. You know what? I was in school, so I was like 13,
okay.
13, 12, 13. And, you know, I'd always wanted to do music. So mm-hmm. It was the only thing I'd ever wanted to do. So it then was just my kind of like one track mind.
And it is great for Keep It people who do not know, you are an R&B singer. You are a producer of some of the best pop that we have ever heard.
Thank you.
Yes, no, like, you just worked on Little Mix's new album. If anybody in America knows who they are.
They know them.
They know who they are. They know Black Magic. I want them to know them more. I stan Little Mix.
Mix
is a pop girl group. They opened for Ariana on her last tour, Dangerous Woman, which is how I saw them perform live. But Black Magic was a hit in the U.S., so...
Well, I think they
And shout out to my ex.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are... I mean, listen, everyone knows what's up with Little Mix. They're extremely talented, mm-hmm. and they... I really enjoy working with them. I love them as people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's just all about, like, people kind of just, like, warming up to them. It takes a while, and it's, like, to break America is such a different beast, you know? Mm-hmm. They've managed to really solidify themselves as a solid girl group in this country.
Well, let's talk about that, because, like, yes, you've worked on Hold Up by Beyonce.
Yeah.
You have worked on Madonna songs, you know? And so it's, like, now you've released your own album this year. And Language, I think it's a great album.
Thank you.
Yes. And so how do you even break that U.S. market when you're also, like, trying to break the market over here? You know, I mean, to talk about another British artist, like, Rita Ora's album just came out. Mm. And people in America, like, to her, this was her first album that ever came out. And they have no idea that, like, she had a career here in the UK.
It's hard. It's really, really hard. Like, because, you know, you're dealing with, you know, sometimes we can think about the duality of UK and US, but they are different.
Mm-hmm.
There's different tastes. There's different choices musically.
That everyone thinks you're like the Spice Girls because they were big in the US. But like, even then, they only had like one number one hit in the US.
But they had like an empire, you know what I mean? It was so much more than just the music with them. There was like the personalities, the touring, all of that. And I don't know, it's just a different time,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And I think, like, you know, if I was in their position where I was, like, really successful in Europe, was able to tour and was able to get my music out there and make the music I love,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'd never want U.S. success to make me feel like I'm less than.
Right, and you even have U.S. artists like Kelly Rowland and people who have bigger, you know, solo success. Kelly Rowland has bigger solo success in the UK than she has in the US.
Yeah. Anastasia, she didn't, I don't recall her having many big hits in America, but like a lot of her like biggest hits were here in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Khalees as well.
Yeah.
You know, like there's artists who just
stan Khalees.
Yeah.
But when you talk about Khalees, you know, like people only know those early like specific songs like Milkshake and stuff. I'm like, she had so many records.
Oh my god.
It's just so successful over here.
She's an amazing recording artist. I really rate Khalees and everything she did with Pharrell and like all that stuff. But there's someone that just works sometimes and it's different for different territories.
Well, so what does that tell you about, you know, the UK and how it sort of has embraced a lot of those like black artists more than you would say America has?
I mean, we're dealing, that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
Only because, right, for instance, LMA, right?
Yes.
So Boot Up is this big hit in America. It's one of the biggest R&B songs of the year.
Yeah.
It didn't do anything in the UK.
Okay.
It didn't do a thing. As in, it was literally, you know, and it's not even because it's a bad song, because it's an amazing song. The second I heard Boot Up, it's a great song. But the UK don't support R&B. I don't consider myself an R&B singer.
And you're a pop singer. You're an everything singer.
I'm a pop artist.
Yes.
I make pop music. I have an R&B voice.
Mm-hmm.
But I make pop music.
Mm-hmm.
But there's artists who make R&B music, like Ella. And like Tiana Major 9 and Ray mm-hmm. Black. And, you know, there's people who make R&B.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get the same spotlight as maybe the pop girls just because the UK has never recently hasn't really embraced R&B. The kind of black music that UK embraces is like the hip hop side, like grime or Afro swing or anything like that. That is more.
And it makes sense that the Khalees and like Kelly Rowland stuff that did hit over here, that was like Neptune's produced, like David Guetta,
the,
you know?
It was like more the Eurocentric stuff. It was more the poppy stuff, like, you know, with Khalees, it was different because Khalees just made like an amazing album and like the whole Tasty album was great. And I don't know what you guys were drinking or smoking when you let that flop over there, but like,
did Tasty flop?
Well, the singles didn't pop.
That's true.
All hits here. In Public, Millionaire.
Millionaire is still my shit to this day.
So what happened?
I don't know.
Did you buy the CD single?
I did buy the CD. I bought the CD.
Did your friends buy the CD?
You know, it's white. It's white people. It's white people. It's just like the elections. You know, it's like when you're like, why did Ariana Grande's Into You get to number one? Why did it just peak like at three or something? It's because you need straight white people to be buying the music.
It's true. It's very true. Some points are made.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you also are, you know, a black gay artist as well, you know? And so that brings its whole other bag of, you know, trying to break any market. It seems like, you know, we're getting an influx of, you know, newer queer artists who are just sort of doing their thing in America, and especially, you know, male pop stars. But it also seems, you know, like it's you, it's Ollie from years and years, it's Troye Sivan. They're foreigners, you know? They're not U.S. queer artists.
Nah, I mean, I think my lens on it is different than everyone else's as far as, like, you know, I'm very much doing something that's very tailored for me.
Yes.
And, like, I love what everyone is doing. I love being a part of this movement, as people are calling it, the 2018.
Yes, 2018.
2018, we are here. And I guess, I don't know, I think it's just...
Well, yours is so different from me, too, because, you know, language just has sort of that, like, 90s, early 2000s R&B flavor to it, which is, you know, different from what the other girls are doing.
Well, yeah, it's just what I like.
Yeah.
I mean, and everyone's doing what they like, and I think
I am in your studio right now, by the way. I'm recording this in your studio, and there is Mariah everywhere.
There is Mariah.
And, like, though. I can feel the essence of her. And, like, yes, that is you, you know?
I think it's just because, like, you know, my taste, I grew up with loads of 90s R&B. I listened to all of that. I grew up with all, like, you know, Montel Jordan and Mariah and Whitney and... all the, like, the Sangers. And then I grew up around, like, just, like, teen pop and all of that. So it's just a blend of everything I grew up listening to. And, you know, it's because I'm not doing, like, I'm not being, like, the edgy, like, off-kilter vibe. It's never been something I've been, never appealed to me. Like, I've always ever wanted to be, like, a pop and, like, make fun, colorful music videos and, you know, make pop music. But then embracing, like, both the queer side of it and keeping it still, like, you know, I'm a black man. I love R&B. I love having influences of that in there. Mm-hmm. So it's just been a mesh of all those things.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Miss Mariah, we were listening the other day to Caution.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing album.
It's really good.
And, like, it's getting great reviews. But then, you know, it didn't chart as high as it should have in the U.S. when it debuted, and a lot of people are like, you know, should Mariah stick to her pop era? Which sort of, you know, makes you think, like, when people call it that pop era, I think they ignore the R&B and, like, hip-hop influences that were even in that pop music.
I think with Mariah, like, I think that's really stupid to say, because I think, actually, it's not about that with Mariah. Like, Mariah's been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah.
She has nothing to prove anymore. Like, she...
Number one Billboard hit.
Well, this is the thing. Not everybody has that. Like, you know, like, she's done all that. She's surpassed everything that any of these new girls can do now. She's done that. She sold hard copy records.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Not streaming.
Not streams.
Hard copy records.
People went out of their house to get her records. She's done that. That has been solidified. Her foundation is there. So now she can make the music whatever she wants to. And also with the pop thing, like, yeah, she's always made R&B music.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, she's never been, like, a straight pop girl.
Right. Vision of Love is Vision R&B.
Vision of Love is not a pop record.
Yeah.
It's not. It was never a pop record.
Mm-hmm.
Vision of Love, if anything, Hero is the only pop record I can really think of.
Yeah.
Everything else, like, Dream Love is a hip-hop record. Fantasy...
Yeah, and she got ODB on that, and, like, was the first person really getting people to put hip-hop artists on track.
I mean, would you call Emotions pop?
No. It's R&B.
It's an R&B record.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know.
It's weird because for her, it has a pop flavor, and it's sort of I feel like, if anything, Whitney opened the door for her to do that, because like early in Whitney's career, you know, Black people in America were sort of like, she's doing a little too much pop for us, you know, thinking she's like better than Black people.
Yeah.
But once those songs became hits and we're sort of like, oh yes, I want to dance with somebody, we want it, then it opened the door for Mariah, you know, to blend those genres.
I don't know if Mariah ever went that pop though, because I Want to Dance Somebody is arguably more pop than really anything Mariah's done. Like, and Mariah always wrote her own stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess she was always in control of how pop it went.
Yeah.
And I think Whitney was just down to sing a song, and she sounded amazing on I Want to Dance Somebody.
Of course.
But it's like a pop record.
Yeah.
And it's no wonder why, I guess, like, at the time, like, the Black community weren't really with the shits. So, but I, you know, I grew up with Whitney in the sense that, like, my mom had all the vinyls.
Yes.
All of them. Like, everyone. She had the one where she had, like, the buzz cut. The first album. The Whitney album. The Body
with
Buzz.
With You Give Good Love.
Yes.
A cut.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. The Bodyguard soundtrack, Preacher's Wife. Wayne Takes Hell. My Love Is Your Love.
Yeah.
Just Whitney and I Look to You. But she didn't get the Christmas album.
Yeah.
I don't think she knew about that one.
Well, talking about communities then, I guess, like, where do you feel like the most of your support as an artist comes from? Especially in this social media age where, you know, there are people sort of in every country who are just sort of like feeling your vibe.
I don't know. You know what? I think, like, it's really more than anything, it's just, I can never know what, like, my fan base is or, like, my core demographic is. I don't know. But I know, like, especially with this record, with the stuff I've put out, like, it's definitely been more the gay community at large, and also just, like, also Black gay community in the sense that they feel... I've gotten so many messages from people just, like, feeling really represented.
And, well, like, I first, like, really discovered your music with Tongue.
Yes.
And I felt like the vibe in that song, you know, just the idea of, you know, like, you know, you want to say something, but you can't say it. And I think the video describes that perfectly, too. You know, and it was just, it's so, every time I was at a pregame, I would put your video on, and the white gays would in LA would love it. And they'd be like, who is this? You know, because it's like, it was just so beautiful to see a music video, you know, with Black gay men in it, just dancing, having fun, and the music is good, and it, you know, didn't feel like, it didn't feel ratch, it didn't feel like cheap, not ratch, not like I'm being, you know, classist, it just, I feel ratch in the sense of, like, the budget was there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you put the work into it, you know?
Definitely had a budget.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it was really cool doing that video, only because
oh my god, I'm gonna get dragged.
Well, no, I know.
Ratch.
No, for real though, like, I feel you though, I wanted it to be tasteful, and I think, when I finished the album, this time last year, I'd finished the album, and I played it to the label, and they wanted Tongue as the first single. And I was like, great, I love that song. It's great, let's go for it. And then I was just like, with the video, I really want to be able to, you know, because we started conceptualizing the album cover and things like that. We did the video the week after the album shoot. And it was just about, like, really embracing just the different layers of Black masculinity and really having fun with it, because I didn't really have any template on how to do it. All I knew is that I wanted to feel really, like... normal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't want it to feel like look at this. I wanted it to look like it was just like a mood, and you're entering this world that where it's completely normal to feel this way.
It was moody, it was great, and you know, I think I really responded to it finding it, you know, so soon after Moonlight. I just think America right now, in the world, you know, is in this big conversation about Black masculinity and where we go from here and different ways that we can represent it than we have before. So, you know, I'm really proud of the work that you're doing. Well, and I want everybody who listens to Keep It to listen to Language by MNEK. It's spelled just how it sounds. Listen to Language on Spotify, iTunes. Actually, you know what? We need the audience to buy the album.
We need the audience to buy the album.
To quote Brandy on 106 and Park.
Oh, yeah. Out of pocket. Did anyone tell her that they're going to be getting...
For people who don't know, Brandy was on 106 and Park on BT back in the day when her album came out. What was the album?
It was Human? Was it Human?
Yeah, I think it was Human.
Was the Human album was the one after? The 11 one.
Yeah, it was one of those albums, but they were like, everyone in the audience is getting a free copy of Brandy's album, and she literally freaked out she and was like, but we need the audience to buy the album.
Yeah, it's true though. I mean... But maybe then, I don't know.
BT probably bought those copies.
Yeah, but also, like, yeah, how did you just say that? That's so crazy. She's so funny.
Anyway, thank you so much for inviting me to your studio while I'm here in London. This was a great replacement for Meghan Markle, who would not return my phone calls.
She didn't know?
I showed up at Buckingham and was like, I have a podcast. Will you be on it? And the guards...
The guards
were like, what?
We were talking last night and you were saying, like... I was like, where are you staying? And you go, at the palace?
The Rubens at the palace, which is across from Buckingham.
Like, the palace? I was like, don't be shy. What palace? Like, what palace? No, it's totally fine. You can just... It's my
deep. Megan, where you at?
To be honest. Show your face. Don't be shy.
Coming up next, Lewis and I take this episode further into season 5 of Queer as Folk.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy.
Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
And we're back. Lewis.
Uh-huh.
It's time to talk about Shawn Mendes.
Woo! I mean, I'm not like a super fan or anything. He seems like a nice guy.
I am a fan who knows like 2 of his songs. So I will fully admit me being a fan is because he's cute.
I'm also just baffled geographically by the song Lost in Japan. Where is he and where is he flying into? Why? He's talking about Japan as if he can get there in about 20 minutes. So he's on, like, the Kamchatka Peninsula? I have no idea.
Well, this week, Shawn Mendes had a cover story for Rolling Stone magazine, and the usually reserved pop star revealed that the rampant speculation regarding his sexuality on the internet has caused him a lot of stress and anxiety. One particular quote, he said, "I'd like to say I don't care about it, but that's not true. In the back of my heart, I feel like I need to go be seen with someone, like a girl, in public to prove to people that I'm not gay." And even though in my heart I know it's not a bad thing, still a piece of me thinks that it is, and I hate that side of me.
I just want to confirm to him that it is a bad thing, and I'm loving every minute of it. So just know that,
right,
Sean.
Lewis is the erotica era of Madonna level of gay.
Yeah, my sex book will be coming out very soon. Look for the pictorial with Big Daddy Kane.
I'm bedtime stories level. I feel like I'm just, I love an elegant tea.
Sure.
I love dressing up like a matador.
Oh, yeah. You're co-written by Bjork some of the time. Yeah.
Yes, and Babyface.
That's right. And Dallas Austin, he's part of that. Yeah. Moving on.
Sean Mendez. I've mentioned this on the show before. It was one of my keep its, I don't know, way back in episode 942 of this damn show, about the fact that I was tired of the gays making memes and jokes about his sexuality on the internet. Mostly because I found them annoying. Even if he was gay, you know, we spend so much time on the internet talking about how we should let people, you know, embrace their own journeys. And we were also very receptive this summer to Lucas Hedges's story about coming to terms with his sexuality, that I just feel like the way that people treat Sean is kind of gross. Also, most of the jokes that people make about him aren't funny.
Right.
How many Sean Cody jokes can you make in one day?
Right. He's a good looking guy. Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's obviously not wrong to wonder if someone is gay, but to speculate, that's a conversation you should have privately. And things like Twitter and Tumblr, people mistake that for kind of private conversations they're having with friends and like-minded people, but obviously the entire internet can see it. And obviously, you know, certain memes, ideas, thoughts, jokes pick up in a way you probably don't expect, or if you're just a devious person, in exactly the way you want. But
true. You're right that people can sort of forget the fact that if you're just tweeting, you know, with the four regular people that you tweet with, if one person retweets that, you know, I'm going to see it, you're going to see it, other people on gay Twitter are going to see it. And so that can really, like, signal boost a tweet that you thought was meant only for, you know, your three friends. And I think that really speaks to the fact that a lot of America's, you know, sort of gay community now has sort of been connected through social media, particularly in ways that, you know, used to be just like talking with your friends at
right.
a bar or something.
Also, I think Sean Mendez in this interview is kind of being hard on himself when he says, I don't think being gay is a bad thing, and I hate the part of myself that thinks that. Well, I think what he's reacting to is that the people who make these jokes are kind of treating him like a constant joke who doesn't know he is a joke. You know, like, oh, look at this, you know, hot person trying to, like, woo women or whatever. Meanwhile, we all know he's this, this, and this. It's like, that is smug. That is, you know, condescending and, you know, speaking as like a gay guy, like with other gay men, we have like a kind of conspiratorial tone amongst ourselves. Like, oh, we've seen it all. We know how it is. And that can, you know, morph somewhat easily into condescension when you're talking about certain people and certain things. And so it just reminds me of when I was in high school. I remember specifically one time, and I was closeted till I was like 17. I was hanging out with friends one day and just randomly, I have no idea what even provoked it. I said to one of my friends, do people ever ask you if I'm gay? And of course, I had no idea that I was gay at the time. And they just go, oh yeah, we get that all the time. And then I put it out of my mind. And then finally I got home later. And I'm telling you, that is the closest I've ever had to a panic attack. Just knowing, you know,
oh my God.
You think to yourself that you're a self-aware person, you're in charge of who you are. And then when there's this other dialogue about you that feels, you know, mocking, or that feels, you know, cruel, or just, you know, it's a discussion about you that you're not a part of, that you're not instigating. It is like devastating. So I
that happened to me, you know, like someone who later became a best friend of mine, and later a college roommate. We started off literally hating each other because he asked me if I was, like, the first week of school because some other people thought it would be funny to ask me, you know?
Right.
And it's like, when you're worrying about that in a school environment, you have to imagine that for Sean Mendez, this is on a national scale.
Yeah.
A global scale, even.
Oh, totally. And by the way, he's not old. He's somebody who's been famous since he was 16, and now I think he's 20. You know, so in a way, he's still... I mean, look, it's just a really petty conversation to have about somebody that it could be harmful. I mean, like, if I were him, too, and I'm, you know, trying to be a musician or trying to be, you know, just successful, and people are focusing on the way I'm, like, pulled, you know, sitting in a chair or, like, talking with my hands. I mean, just you're trying to be yourself and people are laughing at you being yourself. You know, it's just a
right.
It's a shocking
about
thing.
Having a panic attack, you know, one time because Taylor Swift uploaded like an Instagram story of her putting makeup on him backstage, like when they were hanging out once, and just like realizing when he woke up the next morning, like how many times people were going to analyze that and make jokes about it online. I definitely felt bad for him, particularly because, like you said, he is only 20. He started his career on Vine when he was a kid and sort of had this meteoric rise. And so it's like when you think about older celebrities who are sort of took a while to come to terms with their sexuality, or people who are still doing it now, you know, he's in this sort of state of arrested development. You know, he's surrounded by managers and agents, and, you know, he's on tour, and, you know, there's probably not a lot of time for him to just sit down and think about who he is right now. Also, being 20, a lot of our friends still hadn't come out by then. So
certainly. No, absolutely. I mean, and by the way, how many... I admire, I guess, the quotes he gave in Rolling Stone, just because I think it's so touchy and difficult. You would mention Lucas Hedges earlier. He was just on Ellen and also previously gave a statement about, I guess, just his questioning his sexual orientation. And it's just so, it's such a touchy conversation to address as a celebrity when either one, you're figuring it out, or two, trying to just explain, like, I'm being myself and, like, you know, the time will come when I'll figure it out. You know, so I guess I just think it's a very awkward position to put someone in. And I and look, as a gay guy myself, you know, I think it took me a long time to get the language right about, you know, just what I think about self-loathing or, you know, homophobia or whatever. So I think it's sort of a tall order to get right.
And, you know, I saw a lot of frustration sort of with this online too, that I sort of want to address, just from the fact that, you know, a lot of the conversation after this Rolling Stone piece immediately, you know, was like, we need to protect Shawn Mendes, you know, and, you know, leave Shawn alone. And I will say that I found that rhetoric
disingenuous,
very not surprising, you know, because he is this cute, white, young pop star. But, you know, it was sort of disheartening coming right on the tail of the sort of Dwight Howard sexual scandal.
Oh, right.
That sort of erupted over the weekend. You know, a writer who's a gay male accused Dwight of sexual harassment and threatening his life. Mahsen Alije alleged that he was having some sort of sexual relationship with Dwight Howard, and had a whole Twitter thread about it and alleged receipts. You know, this has since sort of been debunked, I guess so, by the internet, because this person also tried to accuse rapper Playboi Carti of a similar relationship about a year ago. But there was still the idea that for a bit this weekend, you know, people thought that Dwight Howard was in a gay relationship. And Alije also intimated that Dwight Howard was visiting transgender sex parties. And so a lot of the conversation was really sort of gross, you know? And like the transphobia jumped out.
Right.
And it was weird seeing how we talked about Dwight Howard, who's a person in a more masculine sort of role as a basketball player and being a black male, as opposed to us talking about, you know, Shawn Mendes, you know, a cute young boy that everyone's attracted to being gay.
It's interesting thinking about the tone of the conversation with Shawn Mendes too, because I think the feeling of pop music in 2018 is one of like inclusion and queer positivity and stuff. So it's almost like when people are talking about him, there's a feeling of, you know, this is in a way us being accepting. Whereas when I think of the sports world, I do think of them as very stunted when it comes to talking about sexuality. So to spring, I mean, a conversation about transgender people, you know, and sexuality on sports fans feels almost dangerous to me. I'm somebody who goes, if I'm at a basketball game, I'm not feeling like my queer self, is all I'm saying.
Again, yeah, you know, I mean, I love a basketball game.
Do you? I find that disturbing.
Huh?
You?
Yes!
I mean, I believe you. I just don't understand. I just think it's not an attractive court. I think the people are moving around in a sort of lanky way. It's not my game.
Well, you know, I like the Lakers. I am upset that a friend of mine, who I will not name, has been going to multiple Lakers games with LeBron James while I've been in Europe, and we were supposed to be going to them together, but that's a story for another day. You're right. I mean, we haven't even really been able to have a real discussion about Kobe Bryant's past, you know, in the sort of Me Too era, you know?
Right.
So I certainly didn't think that people were going to be able to have a reasonable adult conversation about Dwight Howard's sexuality.
Right. Also, this writer you're talking about in the dubious past of accusing people of things, that is very scary. Certain people on the internet scare me.
I know. Those are the things I sort of hate, you know, where it's like you have a whole Twitter thread, you know, accusing someone of something, and people start to take one thread as sort of truth on the internet. You know, it's the same way with, you know, the sort of Shawn Mendes thing, you know, like if you do a thread defending him, you know, you'll have certain gays, you know, sort of pop into your DMs and be like, well, you know, I've heard that he actually is gay. And it's like, who have you heard this from?
Right. No, it's never firsthand knowledge.
You weren't with him on tour.
Right.
You weren't lost in Tokyo with him.
No, it's also just the amount of times you think you hear a firsthand account of an actor who is secretly gay, and then you hear it from four other people and you realize, oh, actually, rumors still persist. Like, we're still dumb human beings who believe we have a scoop when we don't.
Right, and it's always usually generated from the same sort of story off of an idea that someone has.
Yes. And also, by the way,
there's still plenty of actors now that, I mean, like, if you ask some gay people in our friend circle, like, if they're gay, they might think they are, and it's like, these might be people that, you know, we actually know aren't, and there's really no proof that they are, but rumors and conjecture consists.
Right. Also, there's a brilliant Kathy Griffin bit from about 10 years ago where she talks about how whenever there is speculation about a male star's sexuality, they are always hot. And she said, she goes, you never hear somebody go, oh, honey, please tell me you've heard about Miss Jean Hackman, which is one of the great jokes.
Yes, there's always sort of this wish fulfillment in it, too, right?
You know? Yeah, right, of
someone
course.
Someone was sort of like, now I have a chance with Shawn Mendes if he were actually gay. I'm like, bitch, you don't have a chance with Shawn Mendes.
Right. Did you see that? I think Todrick Hall had kind of a weird tweet about that. He said something like, the point is I'm going to marry him now, or whatever he said. And it's just, well, that's not the point. Let's not get.
First of all, didn't Todrick Hall needs to worry about his choreography and the fact that he just did an Instagram story about how his boyfriend was cheating on him when he was out of town. Like, bitch, how about you keep a man before you worry about trying to get Shawn Mendes locked down?
Wow, the Ricky Lake audience member jumped out. That was what that comment was. I didn't realize he was that messy on Instagram. I guess I should inspect more closely.
I mean, he's messy on Drag Race. No.
he's a little obsessed with being sassy and quotable on Drag Race, and I'll say it, that show has enough sassy quotable people, so.
If I see one more hip-hop Disney video from him, I'm like, we have Lin-Manuel Miranda for a reason.
And I am literally in fear of Mary Poppins Returns, because you know he's going to rhyme some shit with Poppins, and I don't want to know what it is.
Well, I've seen it.
Oh, that's right, you did. Can you say things about it yet?
I don't know what I can say about it. I will say that I enjoyed it. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes long. which is too fucking long. But then people also pointed out that the original movie was almost 2.5 hours.
Well, that's because we didn't understand how long movies should be back then. We had like all those David Lean movies that are 175 hours long. You know what I mean?
But now we know no one wants to sit through a 2 hour and 10 minute movie.
And by the way, I just watched a movie that could arguably justify being 2 hours and 10 minutes long, which was The Hate U Give. And even then, I'm like, got off a half hour. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But no, I thought the movie was quite good. I have not seen the original Mary Poppins in a minute, so I definitely kept trying to remember things that happened in the original movie and then being like, oh, that happened in Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Oh, sure. Common mistake. But the important thing is Dick Van Dyke is up and spry in this movie, right?
He is.
He is adult.
And there's another cameo that I will not reveal.
Oh. Well, also, by the way, how has the internet not dragged out that picture of Meryl Streep's cameo, which is in the trailer for the movie? She's so bananas.
Fucking good in the movie.
Oh, she is? Oh, that's amazing. Yes. I didn't know that.
Honestly, it surpassed Fergie doing Be Italian in the Rob Marshall oeuvre of insane musical performances.
That's a high bar, because that is definitely the high point of Nine, a movie that is lacking in high points.
Yeah. All right. Have we talked about enough gay shit this week?
I thought we did a pretty good gay job, which is a children's book I should write. A pretty good gay job with it's me as a painter on the cover. Yeah.
Do you think Kara would recommend that book?
No. By the way, I've decided what Kara is doing this week is just walking door to door telling people to keep it and then saying have a nice day. Like she's on the road doing the work.
She's canvassing book recommendations, actually.
Oh, good. We need that.
Yeah. All right, when we're back, keep it. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode, as usual. It's Keep It. There's only really 2 keep-its this week.
I feel we've underkept it this episode.
I mean, I feel like there's plenty of things we could just like randomly say keep it to.
We should write an Animaniacs-style song of all the things that should be kept.
But until we do that, what is your keep it this week?
Well, as you know, everybody, Oscar season is the only season that matters. Oscars are the only objects I know I love. I want people to have them. Actually, I only want women to have them. When men have an Oscar, it's like, I don't care about your emotions. You're not Octavia Spencer. Well, this means nothing to me. However,
what about gays with Oscars?
Well, as we all know, there's only one, and it was Sam Smith. And he got it written into the Constitution that he's the only one who can ever win one.
Goddamn.
All the year's best movies come out this time of year. And also, all the movies that want to be Oscar movies come out at this time of year and sometimes fail. And my keep it this week is to the movie Green Book, which stars Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali as a pair of unlikely pals in the 60s who go on a road trip. Mahershala Ali is a renowned pianist. Viggo Mortensen is his like tough-talking driver who is just basically assigned to Mahershala Ali.
Oh, so they're us.
That's right. That's exactly right. I'm angry. Here's the thing with Oscar movies. Usually I can find one thing to really like in a movie, no matter what, a performance, cinematography, whatever, because, you know, these movies get the best people working on them. I can honestly say I did not like one single thing about this movie. The blindsidery of this movie, of somehow we're supposed to think it's novel that Viggo Mortensen, who, you know, is the patriarch of like a blue collar white family, meeting Mahershala Ali, and we're supposed to be proud of him for being friends with him. Like, I don't really know what the takeaway of the movie is, other than it's based on a real story, kind of like The Blind Side, and that alone is supposed to justify its existence. Nothing about seeing these two people interact and be friendly is assuring to me. It's a movie about race for white people. And also, even Mahershala Ali's performance, he's giving me kind of like a Yul Brynner type uptight performance, and I just don't find it very compelling. Viggo Mortensen is okay, but otherwise it's just a movie like The Danish Girl, where I think it's an Oscar movie that wants to be about social issues and just comes up with nothing. So it's a big keep it there.
Can I say that the most of the conversation around Green Book is the fact that people may think it's not woke enough, You know, because it's like, oh my God, there's so much backlash about telling a black story, you know, the Green Book, which was a book created by African Americans, you know, to let them know which cities were safe to travel to in the U.S., is being told through a white man's perspective. And I'm like, maybe the movie's just bad.
Yeah. right. Is it just, you know, lame? Yeah.
You already have intrepid reporter Sasha Stone,
who's an awards blogger. Movie, yeah.
Defending this movie to the death. And I'm only mentioning her because literally every piece that she's written about Green Book so far has been forwarded to me because she keeps harping on the fact that it's so hard for white people to make movies now because they're going to be accused of being racist, just like she was accused of being a racist last year by someone who she won't mention, but she's writing about me.
Oh, wonderful. Well, also, I mean, what a tough...
Because I didn't like Three Billboards, and she did. And if we all recall that drama, she said that she was surprised because the, like, National Association of Black Film Critics liked the movie Three Billboards. So naturally, all black people should like it.
Ooh, I did fucking hate that movie. Also, that's such a weird tack to take. Like, white filmmakers... she's saying the problem is they make a movie and then it gets produced and then it gets all these wonderful people attached and then it enters an award conversation and then it doesn't win enough awards or people don't like it enough. It's like, what? Like, that's the complaint? Like, that seems like a very niche concern. If they're in the conversation
it's
at all, that's
a
privilege.
Problem to have.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've also, a sideways keep it, I've been a little annoyed with just the concept of, you know, like Oscar season in general. I love Oscar season, obviously, but I wish that more Oscar movies, particularly a movie like Widows, weren't released during quote unquote Oscar season just so that people would, you know, consider its Oscar chances and were maybe released at a time when the audience for that movie would actually go see it.
I would say Widows is very much a blockbuster type movie. If you watch it, you know,
yes.
It's a classic heist film in a lot of ways. And it has a number of really excellent performances. This Elizabeth Debicki person is killing it. I love
her. She's so fucking good.
Yeah.
She's great. The dog in the film deserves an Oscar. And Steve McQueen's directing is very good in this film too. Like, it's a film that sort of like, you know, sort of like Black Panther, sort of like Michelle Yeoh in Crazy Rich Asians, like just by virtue of existing, could have then entered the Oscar conversation. But I feel like this film was specifically put to come out at this time so that we would be talking about it as prestige and not as just like a commercial blockbuster film when it should have been a commercial blockbuster film first,
right?
And then sparked Oscar conversation.
Yeah, I definitely
agree.
And I think
that dumping a lot of movies that are sort of varying in genres all at once does a disservice to movies. And when we're always talking around Oscar season about the fact that a lot of America isn't watching the show because they haven't seen these fucking movies. Maybe it's because these movies come out in LA and New York in November and December, and no one has had time to see them by the time the award show rolls around.
Right, right, right. Also, I got to say about this movie, too. This is probably apparent from the trailer, but Viola Davis in this movie, I mean, you get all the Viola Davis vitamins and minerals. There's grit, vulnerability, a palpable sense of loss and conviction. So I'm just, if you want all the Viola Davis super nutrients in one place, you got to go see Widows.
It's 15 seasons of How to Get Away with Murder in 2 hours.
Right. And I believe we've actually had 35 seasons of that show at this point. So it's nice that we've condensed so many.
How do they keep getting away with it?
Shonda knows. Shonda knows.
So my keep it is to everyone who has a birthday right now.
Oh.
Fuck Sagittarius season.
Really? Tell me why. I don't understand this.
Mostly because I'm a Leo.
Likewise, sweetie. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I hate every season that's not mine, but also because Leos and Sagittariuses have a very good connection and rapport with one another. And the majority of my friends in Los Angeles, my very close friends, are actually Sagittariuses. So December is just like a month full of me having to care about other people who aren't me.
I have never felt more connected to you. What a deep concern that I hope you mine for decades and decades. Here's what
back to back to back.
Right.
Birthdays.
Here, I feel like Leos are the shut up fives a ten is speaking of the zodiac. And I'm happy to identify as one alongside my heroes, Madonna, Barack Obama, and Meghan Markle.
And Elizabeth Hurley.
Oh, you know what she was great at? Well, she was the host of Project Catwalk in the UK, their version of Project Runway. Guys, she slayed. And by the way, she was funny in at least four movies.
Bedazzled. She was great.
Please. I remember it very well.
And wasn't she in an Austin Powers movie?
Yes, and she was perfectly cast. And also, never forget that safety pin dress she wore a couple years ago before that and became a huge star. I wish more people wore dresses made out of office supplies.
Well, I think that's the end of our episode.
Wow. I mean, we got from Shawn Mendes to Elizabeth Hurley. So we really covered, I mean, if the rainbow jumped out.
Well, thank you all for listening to the Lewis and Ira Variety Hour. Thanks again to M&EK for being on the show. Oh my God. Lewis, Meghan Markle is here.
She is.
She is. It's a good thing that we have so much more time in this episode.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy.
Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.